Welcome to the Mom Forum. I am your host, Alicia Wilson Beach. I am birth mom of three, adoptive mom of one, and stepmom to four. Yes, you counted that right. That is eight kids. And over the years, I have been known to completely overshare my story of motherhood. And I started this podcast to be able to share the common and maybe not so common experiences of motherhood from women of all walks of life. So thank you for joining me for these intimate mom-to-mom conversations following each of my guests' journey through motherhood. These stories are honest and vulnerable. There's a little bit of humor and a whole lot of relatability. And my hope is that you can see yourself in one of these stories and know that you are absolutely not alone in this crazy journey through motherhood. Today, I am breaking from the norm, and I am sitting down with two moms, Lynn and Allison. They are a married couple and adoptive parents to one girl, and they also run a business together called Spotlight Girls. These women were so amazingly open and giving and shared so many different experiences with me and so much knowledge. We talked about everything from marriage to miscarriages, adoption, and of course, my favorite topic, self-care. This conversation, I didn't want it to end, and I hope that you enjoy it just as much as I did.
I'm Allison Kenny.
And I'm Lynn Johnson.
And I have asked you guys here today to just talk about motherhood and all the things that come along with it. So don't worry about showing us the real side of it.
Yeah, we know you like to hear the messy. We've got messy for you.
Yeah. And I always like to start my interviews just to find out if you guys were the little girls that grew up pining to have children, or was it not a thought in your head at all?
Oh, that's a great question. It's up for me. I just had this conversation with my daughter, actually. Wow. She wanted to know a version of the same thing. And I always, always knew that I wanted to have kids. I was definitely pining. I pictured myself as a mom. And I always pictured adoption. I remember as a teenager telling my friends that I was going to, you know, I was 16 saying, like, I'm going to adopt a bunch of kids. And I think at the time it was my way of getting creative about the fact that I at some point was going to come out as a lesbian. It was, and I wasn't conscious of that, okay. But now I'm realizing, oh, that's what that was. I could picture this, like I had older sisters that were having kids when I was a teenager. So I was, because they're a lot older. So anyway, I was picturing, I won't quite do it like that. I'm going to have my own path in my own way, but I'm going to have a big family and definitely be mothering.
So at that point, did you yourself know that you were lesbian, or you had not really thought about that?
I knew that I had crushes on girls, and I thought everybody did. That's the truth. And I didn't talk about them as crushes, but I just sort of was like, I have friends that are friends, and then I have friends that are friends. Like, I just loved a couple of these girls, you know, and I assumed that other girls my age had that also, different, like varying degrees of friendship is how I felt about it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And what about you? Were you pining or no?
No. Mm-mm. I was not the pioneer. I don't know. I guess I, when I was a kid, I was very, like, my dreams were all kind of career focused. Like, first I was going to be an actor, and then I was going to, like, be a producer, and then I was going to be, like, so I really thought about, like, where I would live. Like, I was going to, like, move to New York City. Actually, I thought I was going to move to Connecticut, of all places. Because I got one live in a suburb of New York City.
That was your big dream.
Yeah. But I, yeah, it wasn't, I also don't remember being anti-having kids as a kid. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? I just never really thought about it. I played with Barbie dolls, not baby dolls. Right?
Yeah,
so that's,
yeah.
That's right?
Yeah.
So Barbie dolls are the dolls that are like, this is me, right? Versus like, this is me taking care of a baby.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, no, I actually was kind of a reluctant parent. I think I'm a parent because I'm married to Allison and she really wanted to have kids. And I love kids and I spent my career with kids.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, I could be a parent. And I could only picture, so in my adulthood, I could only picture myself having kids through adopting because I've never wanted to, I never wanted to be pregnant or anything like that. So yeah, I'm the opposite.
Well, that's, and then your backgrounds are also opposite of each other almost. I know you were a military brat.
Well, right? Not technically. I moved a lot, but not because of the military. Okay. Yeah, yeah. I was moved a lot because my dad actually was in television news, of all things.
That's right.
But
that's
so it was a military-like childhood, but yeah, not military brat, yeah.
And you were pretty much all in one place your entire childhood.
Mm-hmm. And, had lots of traditions based on where we lived and extended family being nearby, really, really rooted. And what was hard for me is I was in love with my family, but I wasn't in love with the place. So I always had that restlessness of feeling different and feeling like I want to go somewhere new and do something different, even though I love and respected my family and their choices. I could feel there was a mismatch somehow.
And then the two of you, how did you meet and come together as a couple?
We met here in the San Francisco Bay Area. We were we both lived in other places at the time. And we had spent a lot of time as well. I'd spent more time because I was older teaching drama to kids. Uh-huh. And so we met coming together at a summer camp where we were the drama teachers at a camp in Marin County, California. And Allison had just moved from Phoenix, and I wasn't going to move here to San Francisco. I was living on the East Coast at the time. My brother was here and had his first kid. That was like the first kid of that generation. Mm-hmm. And so I was like going to come and hang out with my brother and his kid and teach a summer camp for the summer because that's fun. And so we met.
And she totally fell in love with me, Alicia. That is what happened. She could not go back to her life. It was like...
No, it's true. I was ready to move to... I was going to move to L.A., actually, because a lot of my friends were in L.A., and I was ready to go to California, because I was, like, used to moving, and I was like, okay, I think California's my next stop. But it's still to this day, I feel more L.A. than San Francisco, even though I've been here for 15 years. So I was about to move to L.A., and I was like, yeah, but my brother's in San Francisco, so I'll stop off here. And then I just stayed here because I met her.
But I will tell you, this connects to this conversation that in that time of like getting the same job and working side by side away from our homes, we'd both flown in to take this 5-week teaching gig at this summer camp as a way to get to know the Bay Area. Mm-hmm. I had a best friend who had moved here and I wanted to hang out with her. And, you know, so, but it got us in the same place. But what would happen is we would teach these kids theater all day and then we'd go out after and explore the Bay Area. We'd go to Golden Gate Park. We'd go to Haight Street. We'd go out and we went to the Dyke March. I remember one of our first times hanging out was this like epic like San Francisco event. And so we were tourists together in this city and the conversations we would have together because we were getting to know each other professionally first. Mm-hmm. And then we found ourselves feeling so connected around supporting kids that we inevitably were talking about like making jokes about what great parents we'd be together.
Yeah, I remember sitting in a bar
very quickly.
It was very quickly. Yeah, I remember sitting in a bar drinking rum and being like, "I think I want to have kids with you."
There was this like kind of love at first sight thing.
But it wasn't like It wasn't like dating though. It was weird.
Well, it's like back to my 16-year-old self with varying degrees of friendship. Like Lynn wasn't with, you know, she wasn't with a bunch of women before meeting me. And so that there was that time of feeling out very quickly what kind of relationship this was going to be. But we played into the lesbian stereotype without meaning to of like meeting, falling in love, moving in, starting a business, like bam, we did all the things.
Yeah. We did take a long time to start a family though.
That's true.
We took
our time.
We were together for like 11 years before we became parents.
And how quickly did you start the business?
Immediately.
Oh, wow. So you guys were just like, this is great. We trust each other. Yeah. Let's go. Because starting a business is like starting a family together. You're just both in there.
It's true. I mean, and we started as a one small-ish project at a time with mm-hmm. like full-time other jobs. And then it grew and grew and grew to what our business is now. But definitely the synergy, because we met working together, the synergy was like, we create really well together. Like, we can do this. Mm-hmm. And so right. that is a special part of our story, I think.
Yeah, it took about 4 years for it to become the business.
Right.
Yeah, but we definitely started, we started as a once-a-year summer camp in San Francisco, and that started the year after we met. But it took us a few years to decide that we wanted to create a whole business around that.
Talk about your business, because I think it's a very key business that exists right now with the Me Too movement and women really, really coming into our own. And so tell us about your business right now.
Well, our business now, what it's evolved to now, it's called Spotlight Girls, and we are a multimedia platform and summer camp where we educate, inspire, and activate girls and women to take center stage. And we mean that literally and figuratively. Our programs for girls are really based in teaching them the social emotional skills that they need to really love themselves and each other and become leaders in the world. And we do that through the arts, primarily theater, visual art, music, and media. So, and our kind of at the heart of our programming is a summer camp and after school program called Go Girls. And Go Girls is what started the whole thing. So we started, when Allison and I met and started teaching in camp, we actually did camps for girls and boys. Mm-hmm. They were all based though in using theater because we were theater artists and theater teaching artists. And so it was all about that kind of social emotional community development work through the arts. And in 2008, one of the camps we were doing, only girls signed up for it, which was a complete accident. And we were like, oh, that's cool. So we'll make the theme of this summer all about the magic and power of being a girl. And it was like, it just took off. And it was so dear to our hearts. And it was actually kind of the most lucrative program financially we'd ever had at the same time. So that's a nice balance. That's a nice, partnership, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And in 2012, we completely changed or focused the mission of our business to supporting girls exclusively.
There's so many little coincidences that just led you guys down a path. It's crazy, because then it says, no, this is exactly where you're supposed to be.
Yeah. And that's, it's cool right. what you're saying, mm-hmm. too, about, this time that we're in, all of us as women and girls, or as all genders, of kind of putting girls at the center, putting women of color at the center, like this kind of rising up. And it does feel like our trajectory has been going along, like we're here now on purpose.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's mm-hmm. how it feels, which is mm-hmm. kind of cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I love the idea of Go Girls and everything. So throughout that, you guys were moved in and you were together from the very beginning of developing your business also. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about what it's like to be in a relationship, but also work together, and how you guys manage that? Because relationships are tough. Mm-hmm. Marriage and being committed to someone and then being a part of their day every day in all aspects mm-hmm. can be a little much in a relationship.
It's so. No problem for us. We actually just
no argument.
It's amazing, actually. It's just magic that way.
Well, I will tell you, like anybody who works with people they love, there's a lot of intimacy, which means there's the potential for a lot of conflict, right?
Yes, absolutely.
That's real. From like day-to-day annoyances to just that deeper, are each of us getting to fully be ourselves in our lives, or is there too much merging?
Yeah.
Right? So all of that, plus then the day-to-day when you become parents, the like number of logistics in your life goes up by 100,000.
Yeah.
As you know well.
And the level of communication.
Uh-huh. All of those things. And so I know that for us, being together in business for 11 years primed us to be parents, and especially the way we've become parents, because we had to come up with, to be successful business owners and stay married and happy together, we had to really look at that stuff like all the time. And one of the things we came up with that works for us, and we still do it after all these years, is what we call the house meeting. And we do it, our goal is once a week, but usually it's every other week. And what we do is sit down and get out all of the logistical planning in a 1 hour session. So that eliminates the like millions of conversations about logistics all day, every day. Because for us, we get, and it comes up and then we address it. But like, oh, every conversation we've had in the last 24 hours has been about business logistics or home logistics. And I'm no longer seeing you as the love of my life, just my colleague. So we were like, wanted to streamline that and project manage that to a session that we'd either have over wine or over coffee in the morning, or but like really plug and play everything into a calendar, get it done, get it clear, so that we don't have to keep talking about that stuff all the time.
That is honestly a brilliant idea, because I can't tell you how many times the back and forth with my husband, and then it'll come for the day and he's like, you didn't tell me this.
Exactly.
And I'm like, we had like four conversations. Like, I don't understand. And then you don't feel heard. Yes. And then it's like you're annoyed with them for 2 days after that.
Yes.
It's real. Steal that.
You can really feel it when you don't have the house meeting, right?
We haven't had a house meeting for a while.
Yeah. And, you know, there's so many, like, we even share a car. We're a one car family.
Okay.
So like even that, right? We have to coordinate. Like, okay, do you have the car? Da, da, da. So the dogs, the kid, and it also helps with boundaries too, because you know sometimes, like we work from home.
Mm-hmm.
So, there is sometimes I'll be in a very highly work mode. And Allison won't be, or vice versa, right? So, like, I get to be at home working, and she gets to be at home, like, watching TV or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because it could be any time of day. And so it's hard not to, like, draw each other in, right? And so we have to schedule, like, meetings and stuff just so we can understand, like, just so we can have those kind of boundaries. Like, you know what? I'm chilling right now. I'm watching my show, like, we talk about that at the next meeting, as opposed to like at 8 o'clock at night where I'm just trying to be at home.
Yeah. Because it popped into your brain.
Yeah.
I'm stealing this because my husband and I can really.
It's hard.
I mean, recommend it.
It's we're not great at it. A lot, even last night, like something happened. Last night you were, something happened and I was like trying to fall asleep and you said something and I was like, no, don't talk about it.
The logistics will be
just Instagram, like, oh, all this Instagram thing. I'm like, I don't want to look at Instagram right now.
So like getting comfortable saying no and claiming space and like consolidating the practical stuff. And then the other thing I think we're really good at and have gotten good at of necessity from like painful moments, right, we haven't had a date for a while. We haven't had a vacation. We haven't hung out in a way that like reminds us of how and when we fell in love. And so to house meetings, like, let's schedule that in.
Yeah.
Let's get the weekly, okay, it's turned into bi-weekly, okay, it's been a month since we had our date night. Let's line up our babysitters. Let's do our thing. Mm-hmm. And to the point where we even got really creative about when we had an opportunity to hire someone in our business and found that my sister and Lynn's sister-in-law was highly qualified for the role, chose her and hired her and expanded our family business so that we could have someone who we really trusted, who our daughter bonded with to a few times a year, because we don't have family that lives nearby, to have her take our kiddo overnight so that, like, most parents that I know don't go away.
Yeah.
And we go away two or three times a year, just the two of us for two nights.
Oh, that's really
because of this arrangement
Sunday
with my sister.
Yeah.
We have 2 days at a spa coming up.
Whoa.
But when we're like together working and raising our kid all the time, if we didn't do that, something would have to give.
Yeah.
And so because we're still committed to the business and to each other, we're not we don't let that kind of stuff slide because it's so easy to, but we prioritize it for the health of our marriage.
I think a lot of we forget that it takes work and focus.
Oh,
once you're past the fun stage of dating and you start adding in kids and work and this and that. You have to actually do work.
Yes.
To it work.
You do have to do work.
We're at 15 years and we didn't get there by not trying. And, you know, like, we don't have a high tolerance for bickering. Mm-hmm. We're snippy with it each other just a few days in a row. Like, needle on the record. Stop everything. We're planning a date or a trip or a something. We don't sort of tolerate just sniping or if we're acting burnt out and taking it out on each other, we nip that in the bud right away.
Well, I think that's because we're really clear on our value too. Like, we told ourselves early on that our marriage is the priority over our business. Mm-hmm. So there's been plenty of times in the last decade where one of those was going to suffer. Like, one of those is going down. And so when you get to that place, it's like, so we know that we'd much rather close our business and do something differently than, you know, go through any process of breaking up. So that's, like, kind of kept us in line, and somehow it's kept us in business and married. Mm-hmm. Just, like, knowing what the priorities were and being clear about that.
Yeah.
We've gone to the edges and been able to kind of come back in a way that's really clear. So
timeline wise, you moved in together, you started your business. Mm-hmm. How long after that did you marry? And then how long after that did your child come into the picture?
You're better with dates. Hit it.
I was going to say, I'm better with dates.
You got it.
Okay. So we met in 2002. We, started working together in 2003. The business started in 2006. We actually started the process of thinking about kids, like, in 2007 or something. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't until 2014.
Oh, wow.
Got our kid. So that if we got her in 2014, that means we really started the process of we put ourselves into the foster adopt process in 2013. Maybe.
Oh, that was a kind of unusually fast process.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, we were together for about, was that 2002? So we were together for about 5 or 6 years. We got married in 2006 too. We got married and started our business in the same month.
Wow, that's a lot. You guys are kind of like me. You get the idea, just go for it.
Yeah, that was all. June 2006.
That was
We started our business and got married 4 years after we met. So a year or two later, we started to think about kids, and we weren't really sure how we were going to do it. And for a while, can I say this?
Sure.
Okay. So for a while, we weren't thinking about adoption at first. We were talking about potentially doing a donor situation where we would have a known donor with Allison getting pregnant. And we actually pursued that route for a while with just no success. Mm-hmm. Can I say more about that?
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't a fertility issue. It just didn't take. Uh-huh. But I think because I had conflicting feelings about how I wanted to become a mom, what would happen is we would try. And when it didn't take, I was needing months and months to recuperate.
Yeah.
So, you know, when people are trying to get pregnant and when two mom families are trying to get pregnant, a lot of the friends I know that have done it that way, have chosen a sort of path of rigor of, like, try and try and try and try and don't give up and problem solve and keep trying. And I found that rigor and that process so emotionally, I'm going to use the word devastating, actually. Like, I just couldn't. And I think part of that is because I had gotten pregnant accidentally in my 20s and miscarried.
Okay.
And there was trauma there. And, like, so many women, and especially young women, when the pregnancy was an accident in the first place and I decided to keep it and then lost it, there was so much there for me that even though it was several years later going into this process with Lynn, it was really heightened. It was really hard. I also had some cervical cancer removed during our time of trying to get pregnant. And it wasn't going to impede my ability to get pregnant, but there was just so much happening for me psychically and emotionally.
It's a lot to take in and process.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't talk about what that process feels like, but And I feel like when you decide to have a child, you, especially as a woman, begin to like imagine that and visualize and start to attach to those ideas. Mm-hmm. And then having to let them grow, go is a process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, cool. A lot of loss. And there weren't a lot of stories and normalizing mm-hmm. around how complicated it can be. When I was so sure I wanted kids, that was never a question.
Yeah.
But that's why it took us 7 years, is that there was just so much back and forth about yeah. how we would try and what we would do and how much money we wanted to invest. I also mm-hmm. want to name that when for us it was a creative process as a two-mom family and required funding, that as right. two women in so business expensive. Living yeah. in the Bay Area, that it really complicated our choices on our path, that we were prioritizing earning money through living our dream and our passion, and we're artists who were just... You know, we were creatively funding every aspect of our lives. Mm-hmm. And so that creating a family could also be a financial hardship was just part of what I couldn't get my brain around.
Yeah. And in those moments, what were you guys doing together to create space to go through that trauma and support each other mm-hmm. in that trauma? 'Cause I know a lot of times it's easy to shut down and not deal with it mm-hmm. Because those are hard conversations. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious what you guys were doing, you, Lynn, to support her, and how you mourned that process mm-hmm. too.
I don't know. What did I do?
I know it's been a while.
excuse me. Well, I think that there was, you know, one other factor I want to bring in, this might help, is, you know, we were also at that time really committed to a specific donor mm-hmm. Who was a good friend of ours, but it wasn't local, uh-huh. which is also part of the it was.
Did you know sperm can be sent FedEx?
Sperm?
I did not know this.
Overnight, in dry ice. Anyway, it can happen. But there was... there was all this kind of conversation with him too. So there was a lot of, that was a conscious choice, because we were like really kind of consciously trying to think about like the family we wanted to make. And so there was like, it was almost like that creativity was part of the healing process. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like there was something about like, how do we like really being intent, really having to be really creative and intentional around how your family gets made is part of the healing process. So mm-hmm. like really being able to be there for certain in those conversations and think about like, do we want this? Do we want this? Like, how do we do that? Which is like not a privilege that all straight couples have. Like you just sometimes just get pregnant and like you just have
yeah.
a kid, right?
Yeah.
So like to have to give it that level of thought can also be a privilege, because it helps us reflect on how we were as kids and like what kind of family we wanted. One thing I would say about it, just like there was a lot of reflection and a lot of taking time and a lot of tenderness and a lot of honoring in that time, a lot of honoring what's happened in the past and honoring what we want to make happen in the future. And that's good for any growing process.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that.
I've never been asked that question. I know.
I love that. And I can say for me, because there's a lot of grief and adoption also mm-hmm. in all sides. And so processing my grief around mothering and my motherhood journey and my parenting journey now requires a lot of grief work. Mm-hmm. And so I really lean into art therapy and art in general and authentic conversations with mamas to just create ongoing space so that it doesn't come out sideways. Grief can turn into anger. It can turn into
absolutely
yelling at your kid and those kinds of things. And so if I'm feeling off, it's just a reminder of like, there's some grief to tend to. There's some loss there. Okay. Yeah. And that it always surprises me that it's not like done, like snip, snip, got it.
Oh no.
It's
a messy road.
It's messy times of year trigger it. I'll tell you, this is really common of mamas who've miscarried. I still will sometimes have dreams about losing a baby,
mm-hmm.
you know, and because my daughter came to us at 6, I've never had a baby.
Yeah.
And that's a loss.
Yeah.
And I'm really grateful for who we have. And, you know, I love our daughter and our path to her. And also there's loss and some grief there. So it's ongoing. And Lynn is an incredibly supportive partner who can stand to witness my highs and lows with a lot of presence and care, even though you've never wanted to be pregnant and you, you know, have had your own path and it's been so different than mine, but you hold really beautiful space for me inside our lives. And so that's been, I couldn't have done it otherwise.
That's really beautiful.
That's great.
That is really beautiful.
And so what made you guys decide, because you attempted to have a baby, what made you guys then decide to adopt an older child?
Well, we didn't.
Or was it just a part of the process?
And that's
another coincidence.
It's a girl.
We decided that when we, we wanted to adopt, it was pretty clear that we wanted to adopt through foster care. We were told to like consider all the, you know, you have to go to all the informational meetings and things. So we did. And I remember them saying, you know, consider all the options, consider private adoption, consider all the options. So we considered private adoption for about 15 minutes. it just didn't make sense for us. Again, it's like, it just didn't, I don't know, just it, for some reason, it didn't make sense for us to like, if there's all these kids, especially like kids of color in our community who need a place to live and need a family to be part of, why we would pay for a healthy baby, something. Mm-hmm. I have lovely friends who adopted privately, and I think it's a wonderful thing also, because those kids also need a place to live.
Yes.
But for us, it just made sense to, I guess, because we get trauma, it made sense for us to be the home for a kid with trauma. God bless us. We actually told our social workers that we were open to any kid ages 0 to 5. So we were open to having a baby in that process.
We were open to having siblings.
We were open to having siblings. We have dogs, as you might be able to hear in the background. we were open because the process, you have to be so open when you get a baby through foster care. It's legally really challenging. You might not be able to keep that baby. So baby's much more legally risky. We knew we wanted to adopt and not foster long term. When we were introduced via social worker to our now daughter, she had just turned 6. So it was like that 0 to 5, we're like, okay, well, she was 5 last month. and she just was clearly our kid. Like, she just was clearly our kid. So
from the beginning.
Yeah. It wasn't what we expected to have a kid as old as 6, but that's just who we got.
Mm-hmm. And I know I have talked to you guys. I personally ended up not fostering. It was a much messier process, but adopting an older one. And I know we talked about some of the training that you guys went through and the parenting choices you made in the foster part of it. Because I know you guys knew you were bringing in a kid who had been through something. So talk about the training process to fostering and some of the parenting training you received during that time and how you've carried that on.
It's interesting. I have a lot of gratitude for pieces of the training that we received, and I also feel like there were some big gaps.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, there's no way to prepare anyone for becoming a parent. At the same time, when kids come in with trauma, the things that they prepared us for in our foster adopt training was a lot around the concepts of off-age parenting, meaning that when kids have been abused or neglected in their early years, so this was just their blanket training for anyone who's been in foster care, saying that if they're in foster care, there's been trauma, without naming the details of what happened. Any kid that has had that experience is going to come in having early needs that were not met,
and the kids will regress to those early ages to get to go try to go back and get those needs met.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were prepared to do things for moments when our six-year-old daughter would really be behaving like a 1 or 2 or 3-year-old. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there were some strategies they gave us there. They did some training around how to manage tantrums with older kids. What they really wanted to bring in for parents was, I remember one of the things, and the training was just a 2-day, maybe 3-day.
Oh, wow. Two or three days.
Let's just start with that.
Oh, wow.
In terms of what could have been covered.
That's more than what, if you're pregnant, they give you.
Yeah.
Well, they just give you the baby and say, go for it.
No, was it 2 days or 2 weekends? Was it 4 days?
Maybe it was 2 weekends. Again, Lynn's better with remembering the details. But I know it was a very concentrated, like, retreat-style time with then you're required to go in and get additional hours. There was, there's lots of foster care requirements that are different across states. But I know for us, we had to do some ongoing sort of 2-hour workshop here, 2-hour workshop here and meet an hourly criteria. But in general, we learned that adoption has a lot of loss. Here's some grief training for all of you. Think about who your community is. Really action plan out how you're going to get help. And a lot around this FOST adopt training. And then some bridging to resources in our community for like one of the resources that got really lifted up and all lift up is PACT, which is an organization here in the Bay Area that does ongoing training in particular for kids of color who are being adopted and having racial identity at the core of their support. And so there was a little bit of training on sort of multiracial families and adoption. It all felt like it was very on the surface, except I'll say that the social worker we worked with was also a parenting coach and a therapist and had a lot of skills.
Wow.
And we just lucked out to
be
with her.
So a lot of support.
So what we got incredible care and support in was how to navigate the transition with our daughter coming into our home in the first 3 months. Sort of that time I felt incredibly held and supported. Things like I love this, where she said, the moment you bring your kiddo home, make sure that something that smells really good is being baked in your oven, because smell is so primal and her first impression of your home needs to feel good. Make sure that you wear good perfume. Create a picture photo book of your home that you share with her before she ever comes into it. Those kinds of details about, when our nerves were so up, and there was so much to be thinking about, grounding us in like create a positive sensory experience was really good advice that we took and still use. But in those early days, I'll never forget this woman answered the phone on a Saturday when we were in the middle of a 4-hour tantrum that we could not soothe. And had she not picked up her phone and done like on the spot kids screaming in the background,
she was literally coaching me to know like what to, I was like, what I don't know what to do. And she was like, okay, you're going to try this. Like that's not what she talked about, the rude chair, right? Like try the rude chair. That worked for a while. Anyway, so so there was, she brought us the first year. It took us a year, which is pretty quick, to adopt her. So we were only in the foster. So we had these services when we're in the foster phase. And so that whole year was like.
She was at this table every week with us.
Yeah. And so when we were like worried, like once we've adopted her, like that's it. It's all done, you know. And so we're like, please come back.
So once the adoption is done, there's no like transition
out
service. Wow.
No, we have services still.
Still
I mean,
we switch to different kinds of services.
Yeah, because our daughter will, until she's 18, she comes with like Medicare services, you know, like and based on that, there's always, you know, we have adoption assistance, things like that. So we can broker our own services. So we still. You know, we still have her, we have a therapist now who helps coach our whole family. And, so we hooked ourselves up. So we do have services, but they're not like required or anything.
Okay.
Yeah. But I just want to go back real quick and say, I feel like I misspoke, and any listener who's like listening to your show, who's doing private adoption, I just want to make sure like I say that I am all for private adoption, and I want to apologize if it sounded like I was judging it.
No. It's a personal choice.
Yeah.
Very personal choice.
You're being true of where we were at. Yeah.
And I know you guys are very conscious in your parenting, and you make very specific choices, which is necessary, especially when you have a child that you are bringing into your home at a later age. Mm-hmm. And I know we have talked about the love and logic model, and I don't know if you guys are still using that. Could you talk about some of your parenting tools that you have found to be the most useful, not only for your child, but also for you?
Thank you for framing it that way. We parent in a time when the models are so abundant, and the like opportunity to research ways to support certain things can be so overwhelming.
Yes.
And so conflicting in the information that one thing that made the biggest difference, because when you parent through this process, you pitch yourselves as a family to an adoption agency. So we started with like pages and pages of documentation about us and why we're so great and why we're ready for this. So there's this from the get-go, can be a mindset of we have something to prove and there's so much to learn and we want to get it right. So just mm-hmm. to say that for me, I'll own that this started in the context of perfectionism, and the biggest thing that affected our parenting tools and ease and what started working for me is when I realized, oh, that's happening. I've got to put that down.
Wow.
And even though I'm meeting my child at age 6 and she's walking up the steps to my home instead of in my arms on the way back from a hospital, being able to trust my instincts that I'm getting to know this like formed human and not an infant, that trusting that I don't have to get it all right and perfectly from a book, and that I don't have to make up for the pain that she's had before getting to me, and really learning how to trust my instincts and get more present and take some of the things I learned through my research, like review several love and logic principles that have been really effective. But mostly it has been about the time of learning to trust ourselves and trust our kid. Mm-hmm.
I would say like the love and logic tools that work really well and have consistently worked are around like natural consequences for things, you know, like that's the big thing that even as she's grown through so many stages of development over the last few years, that's consistently something that works for us, and for her. And I would say too that like there's something about one thing our social worker who was our coach in the beginning said was that we need There's a few things that stand out and that always help get me through. One is that, you know, when you're parenting in this way, it's important to be strict, kind, and a little bit intrusive.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, we're always a little bit more, you know, we're those parents at the party who like pays a little bit too much attention to their kid than most people do. Like, oh, just let them play. It's fine.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
Like,
and they run off.
No, yeah. It's like, no, like that works for a lot of kids. Doesn't work for our kid. You know what I mean? So it's like, you have to kind of just notice a little bit more. And that really helps her.
Yeah. Our kiddo struggles with a little bit of reactivity in her attachment style, meaning if we're out of sight too long at a party, her brain goes, I don't have parents. These broads can't be trusted. I'm out, you know, like, sure, they've been nice, but they're not really here in the long term. I've got to handle life on my own. It goes into some survival instincts that come out as aggression, and it's really intense. So,
and then the other thing that our social worker, you know, worked with us on that is like, just no matter what, like never let her, treat you with contempt, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
so she's gonna, you know, kids are rude and kids say no. But if it's like, if she has contempt for you, like we shut that down. And that's been amazing.
Yeah.
I'd like to say that one thing about, to answer your question about like what works for us, and this might sound, this often sounds different from what I hear from their parents, and that's why I want to put it out there, mm-hmm. is that we made a deal with each other that as parents, so like me as a parent, I come first, like I'm the person that comes first, and then it's like us, and then it's our kid. Like in terms of, not in terms of like immediate priorities, like obviously like most parents, like I'll feed my child before I feed myself. Yes. It's like yes. that. Uh-huh. But in terms of just like, so I hear so many parents that are like, oh, it's all about my kid comes first. And like, yes, I get that. But there's something about shifting that for us and being like, you know what? Like I'm the person that has to be, like I have to deal with my needs first.
Yes.
Yeah. And then we have to make sure that the foundation of us as a partnership is okay. And then we know we can take care of her. That's kind of how we look at it.
Yeah.
And so although, yes, I definitely feed her food first. And like, if something is going on, like I see to her first, but really it's about us first. And so that's the thing that is the biggest parenting piece. And when that starts to feel off, we start to feel kind of out of control. And
it
so that's how we should
rocks
do.
The mm-hmm. base.
The foundation.
So, yeah, and there's nothing. I have to admit, that's something I have really come to in the past year, mm-hmm. bringing my fourth kid into the picture.
Yes. Yeah.
But realizing, no, I have to take care of me before I can be okay to take care of them.
Yeah.
Because I was realizing how stressed I was and the yelling levels were up. And it was tension and frantic, and I was noticing my kids, like me picking them up from school, and within like 15 minutes me feeling stressed and overwhelmed.
Mm-hmm.
And so coming back to that lesson, okay, I have to put me on the front burner.
Yeah.
And that I think it should not be something that we don't do as parents, because it's super important.
It's important.
And it brings me to an article that for you, you write on a blog for you guys' business, mm-hmm. Raising a Go Girl.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you wrote it. I'm going to make sure I get it right. If I took care of myself like I took care of my daughter,
yeah.
Which is key. Wow. Can you just tell us about where that piece came from and
sure.
why you wrote it?
I wrote that piece because at that time, it was still pretty early in our adoption process. I think I'd been a parent maybe a year, year and a half, and was feeling out with our child who was, just like we learned in the training, was revisiting all her early ages.
Mm-hmm.
So I was really parenting an infant and a toddler in a big six-year-old body. So it was physically hurting my body to hold and rock her as much as she needed. It was, she seemed like just like newborns are, like this endless sea of need and mm-hmm. relying on you for everything. But because she wasn't a newborn, she was six, it was constant chatter also. So I'm, you know, even though I'm really social and I'm a performer, actually, I'm actually an introvert. And going from a life where I worked quietly at home with my wife and was a writer and a teacher and a performer to caring for our child and what she was going through at the time, I just nearly lost my mind.
I can relate.
Because you know, downtime is hard to get.
Yes,
yes,
very hard.
So that piece came from this, like, really what I call, like, this part of me who's this fierce mama that, like, I can show up for myself in times when it feels like, oh, if I don't, this is gonna get bad, you know, like what that like resilience in me that goes, wait a minute, you have to come first. And so it was really, and because I'm an artist, and like I mentioned earlier, I process everything through my art.
Mm-hmm.
And so starting that blog at that time was really important to me to have a way to process and articulate, and in many cases poetically and through these intimate stories, what I was learning as a parent and what I was going through. And so I finally had to take stock and go, let's look at all the ways I show up for my little girl. And the list was just miles long. And then what I wanted her to also know that is true for me is that I deserve care and love. And so we mm-hmm. really started putting those values in that Lynn was talking about in action. And I started narrating them. So early on for myself and for my kid, I would be like, So I see you want to play and I love you and I'll be near you, but I'm getting my yoga mat out and I'm going to actually do something called meditate, and you're not allowed to talk to me or touch me while I do it. And it's just going to be for a couple minutes. And of course she had to test that boundary and had to see, but I just kept narrating, I'm going to do this because it makes me feel good. I deserve to feel good.
And does she pick it up as you're narrating?
That's the thing, is it took, it's like, so I started that practice then. You're going to stay home with Mama Lynn and I'm going to go out to the movies because seeing my friends makes me feel good. I'm going to go on a walk because I'm noticing I feel frustrated and the walk is going to help me calm down and feel good. I repeated that language over and over like a mantra. And now at age 9, we literally have got a kid who will be like, oh, Mom, you two are going to go on a date because that'll make your marriage strong and healthy and you'll be better mamas to me.
That's great.
I'll miss you, but have fun. I wish I could go, but I know I can't because mamas need their time.
And most importantly, you know, it's like she's bringing it in for her.
Yes. So,
like, it's important for every child to learn, like, I'm having this feeling. And I'm going to take care of this feeling. I'm going to, like, you know, self-care, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's particularly hard for her, someone who grew up, you know, the early parts of her life were all based in neglect.
Mm-hmm.
It's really easy for her to become that adult who, like, doesn't pay attention to any of her feelings.
Yeah.
Right? And so it's part of, like, the thing we're teaching her
mm-hmm.
is, like, literally, like, we literally have pieces of paper in our house that say, I feel hungry, go get food. I feel cold, go put on a sweater. Like,
yeah,
like there's this, like, because she's having to kind of learn how to do that. And so when she sees, you know, me be like, I'm tired, I'm going to go lie down. It's like just, it's just teaching her those self-care things. And it's so good for us because it reminds us, wait, I am tired, I'm going to go lie down. Which is because it's so easy for any of us in this society to forget our feelings and to just, whatever, numb it out and all this kind of stuff.
Just go.
And so, yeah, Allison really is like the queen of self-care in that way and is teaching all of us that for sure. That's like the big thing in our family. Like how as a family of a lot of girls, we can really learn and embrace self-care for all of us.
That is such an important lesson to learn because it's easy to not pay attention to it and then you end up a mess emotionally, physically, all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. For you guys, what would you say is the lesson that motherhood has taught you outside of self-care, obviously,
mm-hmm.
individually? Like, what have you really maybe begrudgingly learned from mm-hmm. motherhood? But what has motherhood taught you about yourself that has become something that you're working on, has kind of forced you to look at? So I know for me, there are some things that I've had to look at. Like I thought I was a patient person until I had children.
Uh-huh.
And I've really had to like think about that and make it a conscious choice, patience and act.
Yes.
So I'm wondering, is there something that motherhood has brought up for you that you have really had to look at outside of self-care, because clearly that is one that's mm-hmm. come up.
One I can say, I mentioned earlier, but I'll describe further, is that I didn't know that for me, grief could quickly show up as anger. So I have had to look really honestly at how much anger I hold and how I'm prone to like hold on to it, like hold
mm-hmm.
grudges.
Mm.
You know, kids need us to like forgive them quickly.
Yes.
I have a hard time with that.
That is work.
Oh, I have a hard time with that. I didn't know that I was a yeller. I'd never yelled in my life, honestly. I never like fought with people I dated. I wasn't a kid who yelled at my mom. I didn't know. So I've had to really work on everything from like an irritated face, which is normal. All people get to do that. We get to be human. I get to be human. I'm talking about when it becomes like a chronic way of engaging with my kid and seeing how that affects her when she's got a mom who acts irritable or angry or in intense moments, even like rage, you know?
I so know what you are talking about. Oh, my God.
I didn't know I had it in me.
I know, right?
And I didn't know that it was, like, a normal part of motherhood. And I didn't know that if I didn't learn to deal with my grief differently, I would take it out on my kid, mm-hmm. who I love and cherish. And by no fault of her own is she here and, like, needing this care from me. So I've just had to, like, deal with anger and rage, and what a gift. Thanks daughter. I haven't had to do that work before.
I know, they bring up stuff you didn't even know was there.
Gosh, yes, that definitely that for me. I have to say, this is a good question. What's coming up for me is I have felt pretty empowered by being a mother in a way that was surprising to me. Mm-hmm. I was really resistant. One of the reasons why I was resistant to being a mom is because, you know, because I'd been kind of career focused since I was a kid, I was like, well, now, like, how am I going to do all this stuff with the kid? And, like, I'm trying to do big things in the world. I can't, like, have a kid. Uh-huh. And I remember asking all these people, like, how do you do it? And then people would say, yeah, things have to be sacrificed. I'm like, no, I don't want to sacrifice anything. And at the same time, I feel like since getting our kids, since becoming a mom, I have felt like, you know, first of all, like, your priorities are, you know, you get your priorities straight. You do less things that don't matter because you don't have time. And so I felt quite empowered by it. I've been in therapy very regularly for the first time in my life. And, you know, like, I'm learning a lot about just, like, in general about myself, like, where I see, like, I'm learning about childhood again through my daughter. Mm-hmm. And so, like, learning, like, where my own childhood, where I thought, that's similar. Like, when I did move a lot, like, those were all losses. And, like, that's how those manifest themselves to me. Like, so, like, I'm kind of piecing together my own, like, childhood and psychology through, like, learning a lot about hers. I kind of feel like more of a badass as a mom than I did before.
Nice. So, love it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm a really good mom.
I love that you say that. Yeah. It's so hard for so many moms to say. It is so hard for us to own that.
Yeah. Yes.
We use a lot of humor with it. We'll have a moment, you know, with our daughter, and then walk out and say to the other one, Lynn, where's my crown? I win all the parenting awards. Because, you know, like, anybody, we sit and spin, and I do perseverate on my parenting mistakes. Mm-hmm. So if we don't, like, really lift up ourselves for the, like, award-winning parenting that is most of the time, honestly, then it can be easy to overlook our strengths and how hard we work and what a beautiful job we do.
Yeah, yes. And I was surprised too. Like, you know, we were teaching artists for a long time, and so to work with millions of kids, no, thousands of kids,
thousands.
You know, I actually wasn't that teacher that was like, "Oh, I'm a teacher, so I'll be a good parent." Like, I thought that I was, you know, because people think that.
Yes,
and I was like, yes. "No, there's no way," because there's, you know, you teach the kids, then you go home, and then you get to. But I actually was surprised how many skills were transferable. Like, there were lots of skills that were transferable, right? Like,
absolutely.
And so I was surprised how much I did know, you know, how playful I can be, or how, you know, I can turn something into a game really fast, or how, you know, like, things that are really helpful. And the last thing I'll say is that, again, an advantage to being an odd kind of parent is the fact that she did not come from my body makes it so that I am less likely to get caught up in taking things personally when she does something that's, like, difficult or whatever. And I know that for a lot of bio parents, it's like, this is my kid. Like, it's like, it's so connected to you. And so it's part of me. There's definitely a loss that she's, like, not my bio kid in some ways, but there's also kind of, like, it's easier to see her as a separate person, which we all need to do as parents, her as a separate person. And so it's a little bit easier. So it is easier for me to be like, I'm a great mom, because it's a little bit, there's a little bit of distance there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't have that distance, just to be clear. I feel I'm like hell emerging with my dollar bills all the time, and totally am like, you know, take it all personally and have to work on
you're
that.
Trying to kill me.
Yes. So that might be connected to the adoption. It also might be just part of what you bring as a parent that I really learn from and really love.
Really amazing.
Yes, award winning. Yeah. I have. If it's okay, I have a tip. Because I know we've been talking a long time, but this is new in our family and it's a life changer, and I want every mom to know about this.
Yes.
Poop soccer.
Poop soccer.
Here's the thing. I'm not the only one with rage issues in our family. Our daughter, like, deals a lot with her trauma through anger, aggression, and behaviors that, like, growing up feeling like I had to be a good girl, it's been really hard to tolerate seeing, and I get to learn about what it's like to be a powerful girl with all of this anger energy and how to move it in ways that are safe and respectful. So we have worked with an occupational therapist and have been woken up to the world of using sensory tools and play and movement with our daughter to heal and navigate and emotionally regulate big feelings. So poop soccer is when you get your poop emoji pillow and when your child is raging, you don't engage like, you know, how really mad people and kids aren't logical. You're not going to have a conversation. Yeah. They're not going to respond to calm down. And especially if you're like an angry mom in that moment, like I get, and I'm so tempted to yell or just like grab her arm and be like, come on, kid. And that never works for us anyway. But you can get this pillow and you can drop it on the floor and yell, poop soccer, go! And you can kick this pillow or let her throw it at you and bring humor and bring play and allow like a physical sensory outlet for this rage that's not going to like break your TV and scare your dogs too much and just like get it moving in this really safe way. And, you know, it took us a year and a half to find something that she would actually throw that was safe and that she'd actually engage in this kind of play. And now
it turns out
that it was the poop emoji pillow and get a good laugh going, and the anger moves pretty quickly now.
That's a pretty good tip.
Okay.
I'm going to use it. You guys gave me quite a few gems.
I want to do one closing tip too.
Yes.
My last closing tip is the porch date. So, so we, you know, it's so hard for all of us parents working or not work, whatever. We're all working really hard. And so sometimes it's not easy to have a date. Mm-hmm. So what we do is like when our kids like watching TV or like otherwise engaged, we will set ourselves up on our front porch and we will like set up a date. And even if it's like only 30 minutes or 20 minutes or whatever, we call it a date. We honor it like a date. Like we'll like maybe bring a cocktail, maybe not. And it's just like a little distance. You don't have to get a babysitter. Just like call it a date and just kind of have that port. And it's not about logistics. It's not about talking about logistics. It's just about like, and even a 20-minute date is still lovely.
Oh, just check in time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you guys. These have been amazing. And I'm seriously, I have like the tips. I'm going home. I'm ordering a poop emoji pillow off of Amazon because I have a 7-year-old that will work really well with. And I really appreciate this conversation, guys.
Thanks for having us here.
Thank you again for joining me for this conversation on the Mom Forum. And I hope that you were able to relate to some part of this story. Please join us over on social media on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at The Mom Forum, or come give us a visit on our site, themom-forum.com, to read our new blog posts, shop our products, or check out our next event. Thank you, and we will see you the next time on The Mom Forum.